Good day, I'm Anne Dolinchik and you're listening to Coffee Conversations about Influencer Marketing. In this episode, we're in conversation with Geo West, owner and founder of the Happy Cat Agency in the UK, where they implement campaigns for brands of all sizes and provide training programs for influencers and brands. Geo started her influencer career over 10 years ago, working behind the scenes with some of the biggest content creators in the world. Grab a coffee and listen as we discuss the rise of expert influencers, how influencer tiers are blurring and what we should be looking at when identifying influencers for campaigns, and why relatability and authenticity are king. If you enjoy this podcast, you will also enjoy our fortnightly newsletter that keeps you up to date with influencer news from around the world. Subscribe at the link in the show notes.
This podcast series has been made possible through an exclusive sponsorship from SA's number one nano influencer platform, The Salt. Most brands have a communication line to their existing customers, but not a way to get them to have additional positive brand conversations. The Salt solves the problem by identifying brand fans and getting them to talk more about their positive brand experiences. The Salt have a database of over 140,000 registered brand fans and in-depth information on each to perfectly match your brand to the right influencers. Reach out to them now and see what they can do for you.
Good morning, Geo. Thank you so much for making time in your very busy schedule to be with us today. Before we get into it, please can you tell our listeners who you are and where do you fit into the marketing space?
Yeah, sure. I'm so excited to be here, by the way. Thank you so much for having me. So I've been working with influencers for over 10 years now. I started out my career with assisting and kind of being trained by the earliest YouTube giants, kind of for want of a better word, in the UK. And then after graduating university, my kind of like the majority of my career has been leading strategies in-house at big brands and being part of the industry as it's turned into something that brands actually have a team for, which has been really cool. And then the past 2 years I've been running my own agency, which is called Happy Cat, and we develop and run campaigns for brands. We connect them with influencers and ambassadors. We run courses to upskill people on the industry. But yeah, I kind of feel like I've been part of it from every stage so far, and I plan to continue that track record going forward.
I absolutely love that because I think you and I kind of have similar paths, even though it's a bit different. I was in public relations and I just kind of fell in love with the digital side of it. And then it was influencers came in, which back in the day was just bloggers at the time. And it was wonderful. And I just kind of also grew with it. And I'm so excited to be in this industry at the moment.
Back when it was just vloggers and bloggers.
Every brand was like, get us some bloggers to our events. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I know. I remember running those, like, we used to do, like, fashion week events and things like that. And it would be like, ooh, like, how many readers does her blog get? And
yes.
It was so funny.
And now you look back at it and you're like, that was, like, the bedrock of everything that's happening now.
Oh, man. And, we had no idea at the time. I knew that it was an industry that I was interested in. It kind of combined all of the things that I loved, which is, you know, being creative, but I also was really interested in marketing. And I ended up kind of in the beauty industry, which was a passion of mine. But everyone was saying, you know, when this bubble bursts and when this dies, what are you going to do? And I was like, I don't know. I don't have a plan B. This industry better work because this is all I've got.
I don't think we have to worry too much. People have been saying the bubble's going to burst for the last, 10 years?
There's a bubble.
I think we're fine.
I'm waiting for the burst still.
So today we've got Geo on because she is going to talk to us about more about influencer marketing, and we're just going to delve in a bit deeper. So I think, Geo, let's start with a basic. And I know a lot of people get a bit confused with the following. If you can maybe tell us, in your mind, what's just the difference between an influencer, a content creator, and then those people on social media that's just super popular, but they're not necessarily influential?
Yeah, I love this question. It's such an interesting topic, and I think it's such a personal one as well. I feel like everyone would give a really different answer.
Yeah.
Like, I know, like, especially in the UK and the US, a lot of the influencers that I work with would actually not use that term to describe themselves, and they probably kind of resent the term a bit. But I feel like the word influencer has become quite a generic term, just to kind of, it's a way for people who maybe don't understand the industry as much to kind of,
it has
encompass everything that people do on social media. And I kind of use it begrudgingly. I use it because it's the easiest way for people to understand what I do, but yeah. I try and say that I like the word creator, or like content creator. That's what they're doing. Like, you know, the job is creating content online, and that's what their expertise is in. I like the word advocacy. That's how what they're doing, the content creating, relates to brands, and it's where the value for brands lies, is in advocacy. But I kind of feel like anyone can be that. You know, if you have a channel of any size and people are following you, even if it's, you know, 50 people, if those people are following you because they really like your content and you have a passion for something and they kind of share that passion, then you do fall into that, you know, whatever we want to call it, influencer, creator, advocate. I think anyone can fall into that bucket if they have, you know, some sort of purpose and an audience beyond their mum and their school friends.
But then you're still an influencer, right? It depends on what you're talking about. If you're influencing your friends and your family, then
yeah, very true.
Influencers, right?
And I think that's something that brands miss a lot when it comes to, even, you know, when you're talking about someone with like a million followers. Sometimes the most influential value you're getting from them is that kind of, you know, they're passing your product over the table at brunch with their mum. Like, if they are willing to talk about your brand over every other brand that they have access to within their close social group, then, like, I think you've won more than just kind of paying them to talk about you to their audiences.
No, absolutely. And I feel like that's probably the most flattering or the most powerful form of advocacy, is that one-on-one connection where someone's trusting you to give them an honest opinion about your brand experience or a service that they might want to try. And if you, as a close friend or family member or just someone in their social circles, whether it be at work or at gym or a book club, they trust you and they're going to trial that product to see if it kind of lives up to your hype.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're the key opinion leaders in their social groups. Like, even I know myself personally, I've worked in the beauty industry for years now, and, you know, my friends and family will come to me first if, you know, they need some advice on, you know, the best mascara to buy or which foundation should I wear for my wedding and things like that, just because of all of us, I am the one who's had the most exposure to products and brands. But it's the same for influencers. You know, they get sent thousands of products a month, and they have been doing this for years. They are the experts in that category. So yeah, if your brand kind of earns their respect to the point where they will recommend you offline, like, that is the goal for me. That's a successful campaign in my eyes.
No, absolutely, because they truly believe in what they are kind of promoting. And we're always saying that authenticity and just that alignment with the right influencers, that's where the magic lies. Otherwise, yeah, it will fall flat completely.
I completely agree.
So when we look at our different types of influencers, our nano, micro and macro influencers, how should brands be kind of using these tiers differently? And also, what KPIs would you couple, generally speaking, to these different tiers?
Well, I find the tiers conversation interesting because I feel like it was a really good way a few years ago and kind of at the birth of the industry to put influencers into buckets and to kind of, a lot of the campaigns that I was building maybe 5 years ago were built on this kind of like strategy of tiers. But actually, like, I kind of feel like, I don't know if you feel the same, but like, they're not, I feel like people are kind of realizing that follower numbers don't actually mean much anymore. Like, with,
it means zero.
Yeah, the way that the algorithms are going, you know, nobody sees all of the content that all of the people that they follow post. Yeah. And like, I was having this conversation with a brand the other day who, they were so they were so set on a particular influencer because of their follower number. And I was trying to recommend someone a lot smaller, and kind of, you know, balancing out with more smaller profiles and kind of maximizing the budget. And the way I kind of spelled it out was, this person that's got a million followers, they've got a 1% engagement rate. There's 1,000 people engaging with their content on average. And the other person I was proposing had 10,000 followers, but a 10% engagement rate. So the engagement figure is the same for those two people. And what you're paying to access that 1,000 people to the person with a million followers is so disproportionately large to access the same number of people, but through a channel of 10,000 followers. So I think, yeah, people are starting to get it. Like, what you really want to look at is things like, you know, something that's more indicative of actual value, like the content quality. If you're comparing what an influencer can create versus like a media agency, again, you're maximizing your budget so much more by investing in an influencer than a whole team and a studio, you know, and all of that. And then the connection to their audience. I like to always check the comment section and just see, you know, is it just kind of spammy adoration and, you know, like loads of emojis with heart eyes and fire and all of that? Or is it, if it's a content piece around a hair product and all of the comments are like, girl, your hair looks great, like, where can I get this, I need to try this, you know, it's showing that the audience has actually connected with that product and the brand and they've understood the purpose of the content. That to me is gold versus just kind of putting people into these brackets of followers.
And I 100% agree with you. And to your point, the million follower influencer versus the 10,000 follower influencer, also the kind of engagement you're getting from the smaller influencer is so much more personal, and they genuinely have the time to kind of have that one-on-one conversations where the person with a million followers often don't.
So yeah, massively. It's not
that, yeah, that relatability and that accessibility where people follow them, you know, saying we have this conversation. You never get that from the very big macros, which already makes a difference.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, like, typically, if you did kind of want to simplify it for a brand and do it by these tiers, I'd say that, yeah, the kind of nano macro level is where you get the most trust, and their audience is probably more primed to advertorial content than a larger audience, just because there is that real emotional connection. They probably do know in person, or at least chat to online, like the majority of their audience.
Yeah.
And then these kind of mid-tier guys are more likely to have pro equipment. They're probably more likely to be doing this full-time than like a micro or a nano, where it might be kind of more of a side hustle. So if it's content that you want, then mid-tier is probably better because they've got more time than the people, more time, and they're more affordable than these kind of higher tier influencers, but they have more time and more equipment to shoot really high quality content than maybe people with a smaller audience. So that's maybe how I'd segment it.
If someone might have 50 followers, but they're in a very, very niche kind of market, which then makes them kind of a macro within that industry, exactly. And not necessarily a nano, again, looking at follower counts.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of feel like as well, you always need to have that balance. So I try and always have one or two rolling ambassadors who are maybe known names outside of the social media space, that just kind of gives you a bit more brand equity, especially for a smaller brand. It's always good to have some association with people who have a kind of respected name. But yeah, you're not going to be able to afford to work with them on scale for starters. And also you don't get that level of trust and intimacy with celebrities on social media. The people who follow them for kind of just an insight into their lives and to kind of look at pictures of them being hot. Like, they don't necessarily follow them for their insights into skincare efficacy, you know? So it's like, you need that balance of those lower tiers that have maybe more authority in your niche than like a celebrity would, but kind of, yeah, balancing them together is the best way, I think.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of combining different types of influencers. And now, since the pandemic, it's been amazing because we've actually seen like proper experts rising to influencer level. So your doctors, your nurses. And at the moment, there's something called DermTok on TikTok that's taking dermatologists. And I love it.
Yeah, I think, you know, it is something that TikTok has been really good for is amplifying like real niches, just because that, you know, the algorithm is just so random. And yeah, you're so right. Like there are not even just dermatology, but, you know, things like crafts and all of these kind of really niche things that would normally have a really small community are just suddenly amplified to millions and millions of viewers. And yeah, I'm loving it.
Me too, because it's actual real experts who's relaying information and educating. It's not just like you're saying your reality TV stars that's looking hot.
Yeah, and I would like to see more of the industry being saturated by this kind of meaningful, engaging content. Yeah, I feel like we got to a kind of dangerous part a couple of years ago where the industry, the kind of reputation was that to be an influencer you just had to not wear very many clothes and maybe have been on reality TV. And it's kind of rewarding as someone who cares a lot about the industry to see it moving away from that again.
I love it, and I'm with you, and I think it is a trend that's going to stay. I think people are searching out more of the experts because they really want to be educated, they want to know more. And then also those small niches with entertainment, I think people are over just seeing aspirational content, yet there's still obviously a market for that, but it's not as bad as what it used to be, and I'm all for it.
I agree, and I think like the people are getting more authentic online anyway, and
absolutely,
yeah, you're right, this kind of this trend of moving away from the unattainable aspirational and the more kind of just motivating aspirational. People don't want to follow people that make them feel bad about themselves. They want to follow accounts that are relatable. Like I love this shift of people showing their unfiltered skin and, you know, showing like, yeah, I looked really great in this dress, but also if I sit this certain way, you know, my body doesn't look quite as great, and that's fine. Like I love all of that. I think it's really important, especially for the younger generation, to see, to not kind of be exposed to this need for perfection.
I 100% agree. And finally, people and even celebrities are going, this isn't real life. My life is also messy. I also look horrible. I also have some cellulite, and it's okay. It's
yeah, great. Vulnerability is fine. You know, it's a great thing. And yeah, I agree. I think it's really important that this shift is happening.
So let's talk about when influencers get sent drops from brands. So years ago, you could kind of send drops to influencers and they'd kind of post it everywhere, right? They'd be like, look what I just got. This is amazing. Thank you, this brand. Thank you, that brand. But it's not really happening that much anymore. Or am I wrong? Is this still the case?
No, I completely agree that we've seen a massive shift in the industry recently. I think it was a long time coming, to be honest. I understand when the industry was new and brands didn't really have budget and influencers didn't really know that they could be charging, and you know, it was all still a bit of kind of a free-for-all. But you know, this is a serious industry now. It's multi-billion dollar, it's all over the world. There are tens of thousands of people who do this as a job, and I'm really pleased to see the industry moving into this more kind of professional, like value exchange conversation versus kind of just sending something. Like I think sending products is fine, but it should be with the objective of determining product and brand fit, and you know, does the influencer actually like the product before you enter into a discussion about promotion. And I think that any coverage you get from that is a bonus. I don't think it should ever be the objective anymore. I think you shouldn't be sending product if you don't have the budget to then follow through with a campaign beyond just spending it.
100%. So then realistically, if brands are sending drops to influencers, what can they expect from that influencer?
I mean, you know, it kind of varies. And I know by industry and even by market, like there are some younger markets in the influencer world who are kind of, there are still a lot of people who are just in it for the product, especially, mm-hmm. you know, the lower tiers where they may have like a full-time income that is separate to their channels. So they don't really need the paid partnerships, but like I just think if you're not paying, then there's no guarantee of content. You know, I know the laws in South Africa are very similar to here in the UK, where you need a contract if you're going to be paying an influencer. You need to outline the deliverables that you're expecting if you want any level of creative control, such as, you know, making sure that the key messaging of your product is coming across, or you want it to be shown in a particular way or whatever, then you should be willing to pay for it. So I think if you are just sending product, then you should be expecting at best, you know, some level of coverage that you haven't had any control over. And I mean, at worst, like negative review that you haven't controlled, and somewhere in the middle would be just no coverage at all and you've sent product for nothing.
Yeah, and I think a lot of brands, I think in South Africa especially, are still under the illusion that they will just send a product and then people will just give them coverage. And if they don't, they kind of get upset with them and they kind of get blacklisted. And I'm always like, no, guys, like,
yeah,
so,
I know. We were in a very similar position, I would say, like 2 years ago in Europe, where brands would be like, oh, we're not sending her any more product because she hasn't posted about our brand. It's like, well, have you paid her to, you know, you wouldn't take your car to a garage and to get it serviced and, you know, pay the engineer with a wrench. Like, you know, these are skilled professionals and they have a job to do, and if they can provide your brand a service if you're willing to pay for it, and if you aren't, then they have no obligation to serve you. You know, they're busy people, they have their own commitments with other brands, and if you're not willing to pay to be part of that conversation, then you shouldn't expect to be part of it.
No, for sure. And I think we should also just kind of add in that there is still a time and place for this tactic, but it just needs to be part of a bigger plan. It can't just be your only tactic for getting coverage from influencers. It should be kind of a relationship building thing, and like you're saying, just testing the waters if they actually like the product, follow up on that, and then if they do, then that should be part of a bigger campaign for them.
Yeah, massively. Like every client that I work with, it's always like the first stage is get like kind of introducing the brand to the influencers, getting the product to them, like checking in to see how they're getting on, educating them on, you know, the product and the brand and the background, and determining that brand fit. And if after that process, like, you know, there'll always be a drop off of people who either just didn't have time to try the product, or they liked it but not as much as like a product they were already using in the same sector, or they did like it and they would want to work with the brand, but they don't really have time in their schedule to commit to a new partnership or whatever. And from that long list, we'll then be able to determine a short list of people who fell head over heels with the product. And they're like, oh my God, I need to tell my followers about this. Like, let's collaborate on a campaign. And that's kind of the sweet spot, is those people who have had the opportunity to get to know the brand over time and fell in love, and now they're kind of hooked and they're going to be one of your big advocates.
I love that you said that, because so often you see these posts like people have been using a skincare product for like 2 weeks and they're like, oh my gosh, my skin is so amazing. And you're like, no, you can't. It has to be like at least 28 days before you even can see any difference. So it's this very inauthentic post. But when you do have this relationship with the influencer, you send them product to try and you check in with them, at the end of the day, those reviews or those posts or that content, it's going to be so authentic and just so beautifully aligned with what your brand is about.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there are so many industries as well, which you just won't trust a review unless you know that the product's been used over time. Like, one of our clients is a pet food brand. I know from my own pets that they need to have been eating something for like a month before I know whether it's actually getting on with them and they love it. It's the same, as you say, with skincare or like hair products. one of the brands that we work with, they're like a men's hair health brand. One of the advocates, we didn't start working with him in paid content until he'd been using the products for like 6 months. But at that point,
amazing,
he was able to say in his content, you know, I've been using this for the whole of this year so far, and I'm so excited to tell you about it because I love it. That's so much better than, oh, these guys sent me this product like last week and yeah, I like the smell, so I'm going to tell you.
#NoFilter. That's how this podcast is delivering real down-to-earth stories told by real people. For an influencer campaign that takes brand conversation to everyday real-life situations, go check out thesalt.co.za. They are the undisputed experts in real influencer marketing.
But I also feel like consumers are so smart these days because they've got so much access to everything and peers and social media and Google that we can't fool them anymore. If they smell a rat, they're going to smell a rat. And
yeah,
they're going to voice their opinions as well. And then you've got a huge reputational issue on your hands.
Completely. And I think that it's one of the issues with, if we're kind of looking at this like reality TV star bracket of influencers, where you'll get these brands, I don't want to name names, but, you know, for example, like some sort of hair growth vitamin, and you'll see like 1,000 people posting the same picture. It's the same photo with the same caption. Like, there's no authenticity there at all. I don't believe for a second that they've even tried the product. It's so, and it desensitizes you. Like, the audience, you know, they'll just scroll past. They're not even going to engage. Once you've seen that post, you've seen it 1,000 times, you know.
And that's really sad because influence marketing is all about, yes, getting the same message across to your audiences, but it's like everyone adding their own little creative flair to it that works for their audiences. Otherwise, you might as well have just done a branded ad because it's going to have the same effect.
Yeah, people are so nuanced, and it's those nuances that I love that are coming out more and more in the industry. Everyone's got their own take, and I'd much rather see someone who I have a genuine connection with that I follow on Instagram, I'd rather see her take on a product than the brand's take, but just kind of billboarded through her channel.
Absolutely. And again, people can see the difference.
Yeah, they can. You're so right. Consumers are so savvy these days. I think if anything, consumers are less trusting than they should be. I think there are still consumers who see the word ad and kind of switch off, which I think is a shame, because any of the influencers that I work with personally would never accept a partnership with a brand that they didn't genuinely love and they didn't share the brand values of. But I think it is those negative perceptions are being perpetuated by that kind of that bucket of influencers who will just work with anyone for money.
Yeah, and unfortunately, those are the big news stories we always see, right?
Yeah.
There's so many more amazing campaigns and influencers, and I think they're the majority. Like 90% of campaigns and influencers are genuine and are lovely, and it really works out really well. And then there's those 10% that just drags us down, the whole industry.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's something I try and put a lot of effort into challenging those stereotypes. I understand exactly why people have that view of the industry, because that is the media that they're being fed. It looks awful, but I genuinely believe in the authenticity of this industry, and I really trust the influencers that I work with. I've worked with some of them, you know, for 12 years, and I know how much they care about their audience and being transparent. And it's a shame. I think it's a shame that there are still so many, you know, during this pandemic, the whole Dubai influencers thing, like, you know, it's just, it breaks my heart, but there's not much we can do about that,
But I also think those are the type of influencers that's either going to have to kind of make amends and be really vulnerable and kind of be on the straight and narrow to get their audiences back, or they're going to lose their audiences and we're going to see other creatives kind of rise to the top, and that's okay too.
Yeah, you're right. There's no kind of longevity. There's no career in living that kind of private jet, going to Dubai during a pandemic, just showing every designer handbag I have, and there's no actual real heart to the content. Like, we've seen those people come and go in the industry for years. So yeah, I think you're right there. They will always be surpassed by the real, authentic, creatively masterful content creators.
No, absolutely. And I think to our point earlier, that's all changed now. People want to see the real. We're all in a pandemic. We've been in lockdowns for almost a year now. People want to see the influencers also going through the same things. We're all at home. Everything's messy. I've got some mental health issues. And those are the influencers that's really making a difference, because it's not superficial. Just look how pretty I look in a dress. It's actually about being relatable and building that community and having that conversations with their audiences.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
So when we talk about marketing, obviously there's campaign bursts, and then there's also kind of always on tactics. And it's no different in influencer marketing. We also use that. For you, in your mind, what would you say is kind of the best time to use your always on campaigns, or when is it best to use kind of just those campaign bursts? What kind of objectives would you align with those? Because I know a lot of clients kind of get a little bit confused with that.
Yeah, they do. It's a conversation I have with all of my clients as well. I think it's all about balance. I would always encourage, where possible, to have these longer term contracts. You know, we keep saying it's all about that authenticity, like the genuine connection and partnership. And like, even just from a business case, it makes more sense, because there's an economy of scale with these fees with most influencers. Like, generally, the cost per post is reduced the more posts are kind of locked into a contract. But from a brand equity piece, I think having somebody who is aligned with your brand and their audience kind of associates your brand with their channel, you can only really achieve that if you're having this like always on longer term. And also, like, I think another thing that a lot of brands don't realize is you can contract deliverables without determining exactly when that deliverable will be and what it will be about, and that will give you more flexibility. So you can say, you know, we have 3 Instagram posts with you between now and May, and if there is a period that comes up that suddenly you need to be reactive to, you can turn that on next week. You don't have to go through the negotiation, the contracting phase again. All you need to do is get a brief out. So there's the benefits there in cost, in reactivity. But the downside of kind of putting all of your money into these long-term campaigns is it is harder to then be reactive. For example, if the audiences that you've got with your long-term ambassadors, you're kind of reaching mums and fitness and food, but you then realize you'd actually really love to try and reach an older market, and you're not hitting any of those points, but you don't have any budget left. If you had segmented some budget for campaigning, you could have then found another influencer who reaches an older market for that period and just kind of done like a one-off with them. I think that, you know, and it's great for things like busy periods. I know in skincare, like Mother's Day is a huge period. Obviously, the kind of Cyber Week, Christmas, like Q4 madness is always busy in marketing. So you might want to turn on a couple of burst influencers in those periods just to add surplus to what you've already got with your always on ambassadors. But I just don't think you can expect them to land in the same way and resonate in the same way, because there isn't like the equity built with the audience, and the audience aren't primed to see your brand positioned with that influencer if it's the first time that they've ever spoken about you.
I love those points. They are so valid. So then the big question is influencer marketing for every brand?
No, I don't think so. I turn down campaigns all the time because I feel like the brand's budget would be better placed in a different media format. But influencer marketing is for every brand whose target audience is active in communities on social media outside of their personal bubble. But I think that there are layers to it as well, because, you know, for example, typically men over the age of 65 don't tend to follow people on social media that they don't, you know, actually know. So trying to reach them with an influencer campaign would be fruitless. But there are more niches popping up. You know, it could be, this is me stereotyping, but, you know, there may be like a niche YouTube channel in like garden tools or like bird watching or something, and they have like a cult following of men in that demographic. And then in which case, if you've got a product that relates to that niche and you know you want to reach that audience, then maybe an influencer campaign with a channel like that would work. I think influencer marketing is a bit of a buzzword, and you might be getting pressure from investors to explore it, but there are still so many great media channels out there that aren't social media that are relevant to so many audiences, probably more so than social media is.
No, absolutely. And I also always say, if you are doing influencer marketing, you should try and do other marketing activities as well. So you have as many touch points as possible, whether that be out of home, print, just digital campaigns, just kind of linking everything together. So your consumer kind of sees your brand messaging at so many different points that at some point they start loving your brand or they're encouraged to trial it.
I completely agree. And I think the trust thing as well comes into this, right? Because I think there are certain demographics who are less trusting of social media advertising than others, but they may be more trusting. Like I know I'm taking my mum as an example. My mum would trust a magazine ad more than she would trust an Instagram ad. But if she was exposed to both and also saw the product on TV, you know, suddenly, yeah, you're right. It starts to infiltrate the psyche a bit more, and she might be more trusting of the Instagram ad because she'd already been exposed to it in the areas where she did feel more trusting of the content.
So then let's have a look at how do you think influencer marketing has changed from what we saw maybe 5 years ago to what we're experiencing now?
I feel like it's moving to a more like sustainable, like I'm so pleased to see this shift actually. And I think the pandemic actually has been really pivotal in this, is kind of reducing this excess that was in the industry.
100%.
I feel like brands are not, you know, mailers for product used to be this kind of grand, excessive, like hundreds of pounds per mailer with like 100 different shades of the same product, even though, you know, one person cannot be 100 shades, you know, and it would have all these gimmicks and it would have like lights in it and like a screen and all of this stuff that can't be recycled. And, you know, influencers don't know what to do with all this excess packaging. And I think like influencers are putting a lot of pressure on brands to reduce this wastefulness. And I'm even seeing in Europe, especially, like brands are not sending product without contacting the influencer first and checking whether or not they want to receive it, which I think is reducing waste as well. So that's great to see. And then also kind of as part of this like mass wastefulness, I think we're seeing less of the, I'm choosing my words carefully. I feel like 5 years ago, I don't know if you agree, like the industry was kind of a bit of a jolly, like people were just going to Barbados on like 5-star all expenses paid trips.
Yes,
to launch.
I never got in on that.
Oh my god. Yeah, just, yeah, I know, I missed out, man. Where was my Miami weekend? But yeah, I feel like, and it would be to launch like a lip gloss, like it wouldn't even be like this like life-changing thing. So I think influencers are taking their channels more seriously and seeing, you know, their careers and their businesses and realizing that they want to work professionally with brands rather than just kind of living this excessive lavish lifestyle that doesn't actually have any business gain and probably doesn't actually look that great from the outside. Again, yeah, the reputation was slipping a lot, and we seem to have got to a point now where brands, you know, we've done amazing launches over Zoom this past year, so we don't need to be spending $1 million to launch something just by taking three people away on a weekend to the beach. Like,
I completely agree with you. And I also remember doing all these launches, and the more kind of lavish it was, you knew the more influencers would attend, because that's what's kind of what it was about. The best food, the best drinks, the best goodie bags. And then you knew you'd get your kind of full of influencers there. Where now, you're completely right. It's more about, do they align with the brand? Do they want to be associated with it? They're very picky to what launches they go to these days. And like you say, there's so many launches, most of them are online now, and it's actually been amazing. We see more attendance because people don't have to rush from wherever they were, or they don't have to get super dressed up and sit in traffic. they just log on.
Yeah, exactly. And also it's things like that a lot of people I think are in a privileged position to not consider, but it's more inclusive as well. Like there are people, you know, with families or with disabilities or with life situations that mean that they can't go away for a weekend or they can't come to your party. And also, you know, geographically, we can host launch events that are global now and it costs nothing versus, you know, only being able, you know, if we hosted an event in New York and only girls who live in the like Manhattan area can attend, it's opening up the industry so much to inclusive to different ables, but also to different geographical locations.
You're so right, because in South Africa, the main launches would kind of be concentrated to Johannesburg or Cape Town. And if you didn't live close to those towns or you couldn't make it, it was just kind of you missed out as an influencer if you were invited.
Yeah, and it was such a shame. Like I used to get messages from, like, even in the UK, which is, you know, geographically very small, but if you don't live in London, a lot of the time you were just not getting invited to the events. And, you know, some of the biggest fans of your brand could live by the coast or live in Scotland or live in the north. And they just were not, they didn't feel connected to the brand because they weren't on those guest lists.
I love that this has changed now. And I think online launches was here to stay, and maybe not exclusively online, but we will see physical launches come back, but then also have that live streaming component so that you can still be inclusive, which I'm very excited about.
I agree. Yeah, it's definitely something I'm going to take with me out of the last 12 months.
Absolutely. So, Gio, please can you give our listeners your top 3 tips on running a successful influencer campaign?
Yes, I think I have many, but I'm trying to get down to 3. I think that building strong relationships with people who genuinely love the product and share your brand values and just making sure that you have these kind of longer term relationships rather than rushing into agreements with people they haven't even tried your product, you haven't determined whether they're actually aligned with your values. We keep saying it, but it's authenticity and genuine connection and partnership is so much more valuable than just throwing money at a social media post, and that's kind of the end of the relationship. I would say ensuring that the content is collaborative. I think a lot of brands fall down on this concept that, like, I'm paying for this and therefore I need to script it and direct it and it needs to be exactly like a branded production. But yeah, like, kind of being mindful that the influencers are the experts here. They know their audience, they know their channels, they've been creating content for years and they know what works, and like working with them in a collaborative way to determine the best piece of content to share your brand message and making sure it's going on the channels that are actually going to perform rather than the one that you heard was good right now. And just maybe this is just kind of like the overall topic of this conversation, I feel, but pay for the services that you want.
Yes, please.
encourage the rest of your business to view influencer marketing as a powerful emotional media channel, and you require budget to reap the rewards of that channel as you would with any other media platform.
I think those are 3 excellent tips, and it's literally just reaffirming everything we've been chatting about today. And I really want our listeners to take that to heart, because that really will ensure that you have a successful campaign in the long run. So just sadly, we come to the end of our conversation. This has been super insightful and fun and informative. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. I could have talked with you for hours about this. So well done for keeping me for 45 minutes.
Perfect. We will definitely get you back, because we've got a lot more topics I feel like we can flesh out on this podcast.
Yes, I completely agree. And I'm here. You know where I am.
I know where you are. I've got your email address now. but before we go, can you maybe tell our listeners where they can connect with you online if they want to find out more about what you do and who you are?
Yeah, so the best place is to head to happycat.agency. It's our website. It's where all of our influencer marketing courses are. There's loads of information about how we can work together in different ways, whether you're a brand or an influencer or just someone who is really interested in this industry. And I think I'm not biased, but everyone should be interested in this industry because it's always changing and growing. And there's so many cool ways that you can get involved, from the smallest budgets to millions of pounds. So I'm on there all the time. Come and chat.
Amazing. So Jo, we'll chat to you soon. And thanks again for your time.
Thank you so much.
This podcast series has been made possible by The Salt, the influencer company that turns influence into affluence. In the same way that information is presented in this podcast in a relatable and authentic way, The Salt gets your customers to tell their real brand stories to their community. Go to thesalt.co.za to learn more about how The Salt can help you grow your business.